their harnesses and, sharing a glance, drifted to the hatch, which slid open to reveal a silver statue. "Hello, Jophiel." The voice was the first thing Jophiel recognized. The face was unmistakable too, but it was the face of a statue carved in silver. The body seemed nude, but silvered over, the whole of it, as if dipped in mercury. And if you're thinking of bringing up the Mariner from Mars pool, don't go there. That face creased into a smile, a ghastly metallic parody. It was Nicola Emery. Chapter 20. Nicola led them into her shelter, that old flitter hull. Within there were basic facilities. Sleeping bags hung on a wall. There was a galley, even a bathroom. Jophiel's virtual skin reported the presence of a breeze of circulating air, warm and pleasantly moist. A couple of guide ropes spanned the gravity-free space. But a new port had been added to the end of the hull where the flitter's cockpit had once been, a way through to some kind of extension. "Find somewhere to put your stuff. You can see there are straps and magnetic grabs everywhere. A lot of this is here at my recommendation. They don't have much of an intuition about how humans live. Normal humans, I mean, as opposed to Susan's charges. And they couldn't learn that from me either. But at least I remember." Jophiel couldn't take his eyes off her. Deeply troubled, he wondered how she lived now, how she ate, drank, excreted. Even her voice was disconcerting. It sounded much as Nicola's had, the flesh and blood version. Her lips moved, but the sound seemed to come from her belly. He wondered how a ghost's voice was generated. In air, by the vibrations of some surface diaphragm, presumably, a panel in its flesh, just like Nicola now. Asher seemed distressed. She pushed her way towards Nicola, arms wide. Nicola gently caught her by the waist. "Hey, be careful. I'm a lot more massive now, with not a lot of give. Try to hug me and you'd bounce off." "What have they done to you?" Jophiel said curtly. "You had basic medical training back in Lorinda, same as Harris. Figure it out."
Yes. Sorry."
Asher pulled instruments from the small medical pack she carried. "But I'm also the kid on Lorinda who packed you two up for your sun probe descent. You don't forget a thing like that."
"No, you don't."
Nicola touched her arm with what looked like exquisite care to Jophiel, as if she was operating some heavy piece of machinery. Well, perhaps she was. "And I'm still me, in here." Jophiel said, "I hate to ask. Are you sure?" "No, Jophiel, I'm not. I think so. But I would say that, wouldn't I? Look, I think I'm an experiment. The ghosts wanted to see if a human could be rebuilt. The way their ancestors seemed to have rebuilt themselves when their own son died and their planet froze." She tapped her chest with a disconcerting knock of metal on metal. "Basically, they put me in this shell of ghost hide. Like the finest skin suit in the world. And they, well, they closed off my personal life support loops. I breathe out. The waste air gets processed inside here. I breathe in again." As she spoke, Jophiel found he couldn't look away from her face. The detail. Everything was silver-plated. The inside of her mouth as she parted her lips, her nostrils, even her eyes like silver sculptures, every pore in her flesh. She was aware of his scrutiny. He tried to focus on her words. The waste gets processed how?
Well, I'm a little sketchy on the details. As far as I know, there's nothing much in here but me and some kind of enhanced blue-green algae, which lives off the carbon dioxide I breathe out and produces the oxygen I need. The ghosts have been studying human physiology for 1,000 years, after all. They made me self-sufficient, you see. I'm an autarky, like each and every ghost, independent of the rest of the universe, save for an energy flow. Starlight in, waste heat out. Even the ghosts can't beat entropy. Well, not yet.
She raised her hand, flexed a fist. It was as if she wore a silver glove seamlessly attached to a sleeve.
There are advantages. I might live forever. Unless I persist with my habit of falling out with everyone I meet, I suppose.
Perhaps this is the future of humanity. Some kind of merger of humans with ghosts. Interstellar symbiosis. Or maybe I'm dead already and I didn't get the notification yet.
Oh, you're alive, all right, Asher said, wielding her stethoscope. I can hear a heart pumping in there, muffled by this suit of armour. If anything, it sounds more regular than it should.
Susan would tell you the ghosts like to experiment. They meddle with everything, from other life forms that they don't understand to the laws of physics themselves.
Asher felt Nicola's wrist, throat, evidently looking for a pulse.
Maybe. It seems quite a coincidence to me that this particular ghost experiment has to look so punitive.
Nicola laughed, a strange, hollow sound, the most unhuman aspect of her so far, Jophiel thought grimly, aside from the first shock at the sight of her silvered flesh. She said,
"Punitive?"
"I suppose so. I'd stand out in a crowd, that's for sure."
Asher nodded. "And if you pulled a blade on a ghost again?"
"I guess they shut me down, if I even framed the thought."
Jophiel blurted, "Was it worth it, Nicola, to defy them?"
She smiled glacially. "I found the way for a human to kill a ghost, one-on-one. All you need is a decent blade. That bit of knowledge is worth a life, isn't it?"
Asher, impulsively, reached out to hold Nicola's silver hand.
"Whatever they've done to you, Nicola, you're still you. You haven't lost her, Jophiel. She's still here. I have faith in that."
Nicola hesitated before replying. She said softly,
"How can you tell? I mean, they've meddled with my senses. They didn't just replicate them. My senses of sight, hearing, touch, I see things differently now. Perceive things no unmodified human has ever seen before. Doesn't that alone make me something other than human?"
Jophiel shrugged. "That's too deep for me."
"So you see things differently. What things? Show us."
That crease of a smile.
"Thought you'd never ask. Follow me."
An inner door slid aside. She led them out of the hull of the old flitter and deeper into the heart of this ghost station. They passed through what seemed long passageways, all human habitable, to arrive at a large central chamber. This white-walled room, roughly spherical, contained stacks of pods. Jophiel took a closer look. Each pod was a fat ovoid of a grey-white material, like thick lenses laid flat, each perhaps 6 meters across. There were many of these, Jophiel estimated a few dozen, held in racks of what looked like fine silver wire, typical ghost cabling, he supposed.
Nicola was interested in their reaction. One of my chores has been to tend these pods. To stack them up when they're filled with samples and collected. Take them down for maintenance. I'm pretty manoeuvrable, you see, flexible. Superhuman, in some ways. Good at that kind of stuff. And I took a chance for a closer look. I'm not sure if the ghosts themselves are aware of how much I see now. What do you make of it? Reminds me of our own sleeper bays, Asher said. The pods, stacked up like this, sealed and silent. Not a bad comparison, Nicola said. And the pods themselves, Jophiel said. The material of the pods, a pale grey, was a subtly different shade from the walls. These are made from hull plate, he guessed. Chile hull plate. Asher nodded and brushed one pod with a gloved hand tentatively. Certainly looks like it. I could confirm...
No need, Nicola said.
I saw some of these shells being... grown. Once you have starlight and a chili flower, with a little skill to the shaping as it grows, you can make anything. The ghosts are masters of the stuff, even if they are as much in awe of the chili as we are. And inside these pods? You said the ghosts were collecting samples of what? Have you seen one opened?
She shook her head.
Don't need to. I can see inside. See through hull plate. She turned to the pods with those silvered eyes. I told you. The ghosts gave me senses beyond the human. Another ambiguous gift. And the stuff inside these pods would be invisible to you, but not to me. I can see them. Lying inside these pods.
She raised her silvered face as if to a sky.
And more of them out in the galaxy. Gathered in a thick plane in the disk like a bank of mist, and huge, shining structures out in the halo, tangled towers.
Asher evidently recognized the descriptions. She said a little wildly,
Dark matter. Are you seeing dark matter? That sounds like the observations the Gear crew reported before the mutiny. But they had super-capable neutrino telescopes and other gear. How is it even possible for you to just see it?
Nicola shrugged.
Ask the ghosts. I think I must be seeing gravity waves somehow, or possibly hearing them. The frequencies are about right, aren't they? Seems a minor miracle compared to the hyperdrive, for instance. But yes, they can see dark matter. And now, so can I.
She looked at Jophiel.
Which ought to give you a clue about what they've got in those pods, Poole.
He thought it over.
Leith. You're talking about what we found in the sun. Above the fusing core, those big, dark matter forms.
She seemed to smile.
Like a school of fish, you said.
So I did.
Lenses of dark matter swimming in the heart of the sun. Schools of Photino fish. But they were bigger, much bigger, 50 meters across, more.
Nicola shrugged.
So, when the ghosts went trawling in the heart of this star, the way we did in Sol, they brought back samples. But small fry. Literally, maybe, the youngest.
Why?
Why capture dark matter creatures? For the same reason they captured humans? Curiosity? Not scientific curiosity, though, as we understand it. Not abstract.
What do you mean?
Susan Chen figured out a lot of it. Well, she had the time. The ghosts obsess about the nature of the universe and their place in it. Remember their origin? The failed star, the frozen world. Once,
When we lived on an apparently infinite, eternally fecund earth, we humans believed that the universe was designed to nurture us. The ghosts evolved believing the universe had already tried to kill them, at least once. So they want to understand how it works, to stop that happening again. And they want to anticipate any threat before it gets too big to handle.
Any threat? Jophiel mused. Yes.
Such as the Chili and the dark matter creatures in the stars.
Asher nodded, caught up in the argument.
Yes, she's right. Remember, we never really got to finish the studies you began by exploring the dark matter schools in the sun. We got overwhelmed by the Chili. It was clear, though, that the presence of the dark matter fish was affecting the evolution of the sun itself, dampening its fusion processes possibly by redistributing heat.
And, Nicola said,
if it's affecting the sun that way, there's every reason to suppose that the same, blight might be affecting many more stars. Every star in the galaxy, maybe. Who knows?
In that case, no wonder they're here, Asher said. The ghosts.
Because this system is far from usual. Because here you have the Chili and the dark matter creatures, those two threat factors somehow interacting. All of which must be somehow connected to the ghosts' apparent meddling with the star itself. Which I've yet to understand, though we've had plenty of clues that they're doing just that.
Nicola was staring at Jophiel with eerily unblinking metallic eyes. It was the eyes above all, he thought, uneasily, that made her seem inhuman.
And you know why it's here, Jophiel. It's about another threat factor for the ghosts.
It is because of you, Poole. A ghost had materialized behind them all.
Jophiel whirled, startled. All ghosts looked alike.
This one had sounded like the ambassador. That might mean nothing. Its tone, as always, was flat, without inflection, like a badly read script. The ghost said now, "We learned so much from our analysis of the data presented by the lost creature you called the wormhole ghost. There are many threats we have faced, from the primordial star destroyer to the galaxy-wide dark matter stellar infestation to the works of the Chili."
Jophiel stole a glance at Asher. The galaxy-wide dark matter stellar infestation. There it was, confirmed in a casual phrase, this universal canker in, presumably, every star.
But only you, Poole, or your alternates, have inspired a war that led to our extinction, in one timeline at least. So we sought to understand this, to understand your kind. And of all of fleeing humanity, we are lucky to have lured Michael Poole himself here. An avatar, at least. And as for our meddling with the star, as you call it, come, let me show you what we intend. Even you, Poole, might be impressed at the scale of our ambition.
A doorway opened behind it. The ghost drifted out. The three of them followed it along a short tunnel, paddling through microgravity along the walls. Followed the ghost into a chamber full of troubled sunlight. Chapter 21. The face of Guba's star, twisted and torn by convulsing magnetic fields, was an ocean of light that filled one apparently transparent wall of this chamber. What were evidently instruments or data recorders cluttered the room. Enigmatic ghost technology, a mass of silver baubles and string, but there were no ghosts working here. And now a metallic spheroid shot into view, apparently coming from directly beneath Jophiel's own position, hurtling down towards the surface of the star. Another of those bombs. Jophiel almost expected the frame of the craft to shudder from the recoil. As they watched, the sphere diminished to a point before disappearing against the starscape. The ghost rolled, silent. Jophiel asked, "What are you doing here, ghost?"
"It's difficult to explain. I mean, to explain to you."
It paused.
"Tell me what you believe or have guessed, and I will tell you what you have got wrong."
Nicola laughed a gruesome sound. "Doesn't this remind you of Highsmith Marston Pool? All those lectures on Galia 3?
"We think," said Asher heavily, "or at least I think, that you are inducing what we would call a Nova event. You know what I mean by that?"
"We have the knowledge contained in your ship's libraries. Yes, I know what that means to you."
"We've never observed a Nova. I mean, not close to. We had never left our system before the Chili came, never even sent a probe to a potential Nova. But I think I recognize the preliminary symptoms, the instabilities, the massive flares."
Jophiel cut in. "Are you causing this? Deliberately destabilizing this star?"
"Yes, we are destabilizing the star."
That bland admission chilled Jophiel, the way all of their theorizing so far had failed to.
"Wow," he said. "Very well. Why would you do that?"
"We are studying the dark matter creatures which infest all the stars, as you have deduced. We have captured samples. Now we want to see what happens when they are put under stress. Will they flee this troubled star? Will they try to stabilize it, to save it? And the Chili are watching, of course. You yourselves have explored their monitoring positions on Guba C. Their reaction, if any, will be instructive too."
Nicola said heavily,
"The ghosts are pursuing long-term objectives here. I think in their bleak, logical way, they see a future in which the last of them will huddle around the last healthy star. And then, you see, it will pay for them to have developed weapons to drive out the Fotino fish and other interlopers."
"Luridly put," the ghost said, "but essentially correct."
"Well, I'm an engineer," Jophiel said, "and I'm a lot more interested in how they're doing this. Asher, you said that in a typical Nova event, a companion star would dump about a 10,000th part of the target star's mass onto its surface before the debris layer was thick enough to trigger fusion. Correct?" She nodded. Jophiel gestured at the star. "Guba has around the same mass as our sun. 1/10,000th of that is around the mass of Uranus or Neptune, of a giant planet. How are you going to deliver such a mass to the surface?"
"We aren't," the ghost said blandly. "We take a slice of the photosphere, the star's visible upper surface. A slice a few hundred meters thick from a photosphere a few hundred kilometers thick."
Asher was working sums in her head, Jophiel could see.
"That would give you only about a billionth of the mass that you would need." "True. So what we do is to increase the weight of that layer by a factor of a billion. That will induce the necessary fusion-inducing compression, you see."
Asher said, "And I admit I'm lost. Weight is mass times gravity. How do you increase the weight without adding mass?"
"By increasing gravity," the ghost said patiently. "Locally."
It was as if it was speaking to an earnest but limited child, Jophiel thought, irritated. Fine. How will you do that?
By changing the laws of physics.
The humans just stared. And how will you do that?
Using Quagma phantoms, actually.
The principle turned out to be simple. The practice, Jophiel, the engineer, noted ruefully, was somewhat more challenging. It was all about the birth of the universe. In the very first moments after the Big Bang, when the universe was not yet even as old as the Planck time, the characteristic time of quantum uncertainty, less than 1/10,000,000th of a trillionth of a trillionth of a trillionth of a second, the cosmos was a simple place, as well as a very small one. Even the forces of physics did not yet exist, or rather, the four forces, gravity, electromagnetic, and the two nuclear forces, had not yet separated out of a primordial superforce. Jophiel remembered that Highsmith Marston had hypothesized that this was the moment in which the seeds of the creatures that would become the Chili had been born, in the twisted space-time that had prevailed in the last brief epoch. It could not last. The universe expanded and cooled, and the superforce decomposed, with first gravity splitting off from the rest. Then, when the remnant gut force itself collapsed, gut standing for grand unified theory, an archaic term for the merger of the electromagnetic and nuclear forces, the energy released fueled a huge expansion of the universe, an inflationary energy later harnessed by generations of pools to drive their interstellar craft. The universe had still been so hot that even nucleons, protons and neutrons, the components of the nucleus of an atom, could not yet exist. Instead, space was filled up with quagma, a hot soup of still more fundamental particles called quarks, that were crystallizing out of the cooling energy fields that pervaded the young cosmos. And this was the origin of the creatures humans had named Quagma Phantoms, when they had come spilling out of the Jupiter wormhole after the Chili invader, and proved, initially anyhow, almost as destructive. The Quagma Phantoms had been born with the universe only a microsecond old, and had gone almost extinct after 20 or 30 microseconds. Almost.
It is the symmetry of the very early universe that we seek to exploit, the ghost said calmly. The bland symmetries of the primal superforce. The component forces resulting from its decay, you see, falling out of the broken symmetry, are governed by fundamental constants. Numbers which fix the strength of the fundamental forces. Thus, in human science, the gravitational constant, the speed of light.
I get it, Jophiel said. I think.
But there was a certain randomness about that initial symmetry breaking. Like a stylus stood on its end. There is only one position of equilibrium. But when the symmetry is lost, the stylus can fall any which way, Asher said. You get different values for the physical constants, different laws. And this is how you ghosts run your experiments, Jophiel said, working it out. In a small region of the universe, in this case a shell wrapped around Goober's star, you recreate the conditions of the Planck-scale universe. The extreme heat, the density. The primal superforce, Asher said, understanding. And then, if you can control or shape the way it decays in that fragment of space-time, out pop different constants, Jophiel said. And so different physical laws. In this case, a sub-universe in which the force of gravity is a billion times stronger than... Well, then it is here.
Asha's eyes were wide as she thought that through.
In such a universe, stars just a few kilometers wide would fuse and burn out in a few years. What a fireworks show. But would life be possible? And you do all this with Quagma phantoms.
We have a variety of methods, but the Quagma phantoms being a relic of the early universe themselves, though from an age of relative cold and stability compared to the Planck epoch, can be corralled and induced to...
Sounds like a lot of fuss, Jophiel cut in. Why not just throw a Neptune into the star after all? This system has giant planets to spare.
For the sake of control, of fine tuning...
And for the aesthetic pleasure of it, Nicola put in. I think that's a motive with the ghosts. They do stuff in part just to see if they can do it and how well. I don't think they'd ever admit it, but that's the truth. Isn't it, Ambassador?
In a hostile universe, one never knows when an ability to tune gravity might come in handy.
The ghost rolled complacently. And the humans turned back to the troubled face of the much tampered with star. The ghosts kept the party at the star station for several days. Jophiel speculated that they were interested in human reactions to their exploits. Then they were returned to the island. For 3 more months, the routine of life for the humans in the Guba system continued its strange course. Jophiel split his time between the island life dome, where the priority was still to ensure the long-term continuance of life support and survival, and the deep valleys where humans still foraged for portable Chile artifacts. And all the while, in the ghost's stellar station, a rotating team led by Nicola and Asha kept watch on the star itself, as it was slowly destabilized. Eventually, Asha predicted that some kind of nova event might be no more than weeks, even days away. That was when the Chaks invaded. Chapter 22. For Jophiel, it started with a shadow on the face of Guba's star. On Guba C, it was an early morning of that 25-hour day. Pre-dawn, in fact. The star would not rise for another hour at the longitude of Ghost Plateau, or at the rough camps the humans had established in the Chile valleys far below. It was morning by the ship's clock. The island crew had kept up their routine of watches to maintain discipline and morale. And it was morning, too, for Jophiel, Nicola and Asha, who, when it began, happened to be back at their posts at the Ghost's star station, though there was no night or day on a station bathed in the perpetual light of a photosphere that covered one half of the visible universe. That was how Asha Fennell, at one of the Ghost's monitoring positions, became the first human to see the invader.
Nicola? Jophiel? You'd better get down here.
Jophiel was at the window as fast as the processing cycle of the systems that supported him could manage the translocation. Nicola was only a few heartbeats slower. Asha stood before the big observing window, which showed a slab of starscape crawling with the usual prominences and sunspots, shifting slowly past as the station followed its whipping 2-hour orbit around Guba's star. This morning, though, there was a flaw in that sprawling starscape, a shadow against the brilliance, perfectly circular, suspended in the precise middle of the big oval window. Jophiel found it oddly hard to look at, like a flaw in his own vision. His thinking felt slow too.
Something new?
Yes, said Asha. Between us and the star, tracking our orbit.
Is it artificial?
Hard to tell. It's a couple of kilometers across. It's been there just seconds,
Asher said, checking a timer. A minute now. Appeared out of nowhere.
Hyperdrive?
Of some kind. Looks like it. I've run a quick scan of its radiation signature, such as it is. We have observed that you get a quick burst of exotic particles when a craft, folds down out of hyperdrive. Very transient and localized. It took us a while to observe it with the ghost ships. Here it appeared right in front of me. Same hyperdrive technology, if I had to guess, or a close variant.
So, from the same source, Jophiel said. Another clone of Chile technology, I guess.
But that doesn't look like a ghost ship.
Nicola glanced over the displays.
It's pretty near us. And it's holding its position, matching our orbit very closely. I can't see any sign of exhaust plumes or...
Another reactionless drive, then.
Asher said, I'm getting more imagery.
In her soft screen, that shadowed black circle started to fill with detail. Jophiel realized he was seeing a synthesis of other wavelengths, a translation of more exotic radiations, neutrinos, even scattershot gravity waves.
Detail. The thing was a sphere.
The near side of the kilometers-wide ball was rough, greyish, creased, even wrinkled, and pocked with pits and holes and scars, featured almost like navels. In these pits, something glittered. Fragments of technology, perhaps. And in one place, a kind of flap was drawing back, like an immense curtain, to reveal a glassy surface beneath.
Jophiel didn't dare trust his own interpretation.
That hull doesn't look like metal to me, or anything artificial, not even Chile hull plate.
Flesh, Nicola said bluntly.
Or more specifically, skin, like hide. That thing's not artificial, it's more like a huge, augmented animal.
Those pockmarks, Asher said. There are some kind of artifacts in them, monitors of some kind.
Jophiel asked, or weapons? And that big curtain, drawing back.
Not a curtain.
A new voice. They turned.
A ghost, presumably the ambassador who usually worked with the humans, and as usual, it had just appeared without warning out of thin air, a minor technological miracle that Jophiel barely noticed anymore.
Not a curtain, no. An eyelid.
They turned back to the window.
And now, from that uncovered pit, an eye, unmistakable, with a gleaming lens embedded in a grey background, stared back at them.
A camera eye, Asher said, wondering. A form so useful that evolution rediscovered it many times on Earth, in lineages as divergent as humans and birds and cuttlefish. And here it is again.
She forced a laugh.
Not what I expected to see when I came on station this morning.
The ambassador seemed to speak with urgency, despite the customary tonelessness of its voice.
That is Chax, or more specifically a spline warship, with one or more Chax as passengers, as controllers.
Asher gaped. A ship? A living vessel?
Its origin is an interesting evolutionary parable, the ghost said, which we can discuss another time.
The Chax, Jophiel said, remembering.
The space-faring species who they had been told had traded the hyperdrive with the ghosts, and who might one day have conquered humanity. Now, here they were. He suppressed a shudder, an almost superstitious reaction. He wondered what a Chax looked like. He turned to the ghost.
I guess they've been watching you ever since they sold you the hyperdrive, right?
And now, just as this vast experiment you're running on this star is coming to a climax...
Here are the Chacks once again, Nicola said. And I'm betting not to offer their congratulations.
I'm getting the sense that this galaxy we're crossing is nothing but a food chain. The ghosts beat up on us, the Chacks beat up on the ghosts, and the Chili...
Asher said quickly, I think I saw a spark. Light. In one of those surface pits. A weapon charging up and... Brace!
Jophiel saw it. A thread of cherry-red light crossing space, stabbing into the tangled fabric of this ghost station. Reflexively, he grabbed at a wall, but his virtual hand sank into the surface, pixels spraying in a painful consistency violation. When the bolt hit, he could feel the room shudder. Then more strikes flared, more blows were taken. The whole station seemed to convulse. Yet it survived. Jophiel imagined huge energies pouring into the station's fabric. Maybe the inertial control was being overwhelmed, but the loose, even fractal, tangle-ship structure must be efficient at absorbing energy strikes. And he wondered now if this station and the tangle-ships had been designed to be defensible against this kind of assault. This was a fortress. The tangle-ships were war machines, and he'd never recognized it. He recognized that weapon, though. That is a planet buster, he growled. And the last time I saw one used in anger, it was wielded by a Chili as it tried to cage the Earth.
We call it a starbreaker, the ghost said dryly. But yes, that is the technology, acquired by the Chacks, we believe, before your kind had learned how to fix stone blades to wooden shafts.
So, Nicola said, I'm guessing the Chacks have come to steal your treasures. Whatever it is you're doing here at Goober's Star. What now?
We fight back, the ghost stated simply. I fear we cannot guarantee your protection. This system space now swarms with spline warships, from the vicinity of the star itself to the outer planetoids.
Jophiel frowned.
Already?
Nicola nodded.
Think about it, Jophiel. This is a hyperdrive invasion. You wouldn't see it coming. There would be no simple, easily tracked approach, no border to defend, no beaches to be landed on, no sky to fall on. The enemy could just show up at targets distributed across the system, folding down simultaneously out of nowhere.
She punched her fist.
Leith, as soon as we recognized the hyperdrive tech for what it is, we should have brainstormed the military possibilities. I wish Max Ward was here, and I never thought I'd say that.
Nowhere in the system is safe, the ghost said. But away from the star is safer.
Asher frowned.
What do you mean by that?
Nicola interrupted any reply.
Jophiel, we should project you back to Goober C. At light speed, you can be there in 16 minutes. The assault may already have started there. Warn them. Help them prepare.
Jophiel nodded curtly. Ambassador, take Asher and Nicola back to Goober C. Asher, don't argue. By hyperdrive, you might even beat me back there.
We have transports leaving now, the ambassador said.
The room shuddered again. Jophiel looked around wildly.
What was that? Another Chack strike?
Nicola's silvered face crumpled into a grin.
The ghosts are fighting back. Go! Go!
And in a flash... Chapter 23. In a flash, Jophiel was back in the island Life Dome, rooted to the rock of Goober C. The planet's 140% gravity settled heavily on his virtual bones. He looked around quickly. He was standing near the amphitheatre. People were gathered in knots around heaps of gear. Everyone was either in a skin suit or donning one, and Susan Chen was with a huddle of the Gord crew who were hunched over looking bewildered. He felt a surge of satisfaction. The first warning from the sun station must indeed have been delivered here almost instantaneously by hyperdrive, and arriving by light-speed's crawl 16 minutes later, he was seeing the crew's response. He looked up through the scuffed surface of the life dome at Guba C's perennially cloudy sky. It was still dark, not yet dawn here, but he saw points of light crawling under the clouds, cherry-red flashes. He muttered a command to enable him to access his projection source code. "Magnify," he muttered. Now his eyes worked like zoom lenses, although it hurt. And he saw spline ships, like fleshy eyeballs, he thought, massive, suspended in the sky of Guba C. Perhaps a dozen in his field of view, they gathered in groups of three or four, perhaps for mutual protection or tactical advantage. More elusive, harder to pick out, he saw ghost tangle ships. Cherry red light flickered between the manoeuvring fleets, transient threads, the paths of the beams clearly visible, if momentarily, like laser light flashing through smoke. So both sides had planet busters, more Chile technology purloined and sold on, and damage was being done. Big black scars blossomed in the fleshy hides of the Chak's vessels, while tangle ships folded around the planet buster strikes like crumpled paper. There was a sound like distant thunder. Jophiel had no way of telling how the conflict was going, which side looked like it might earn victory. Maybe he should be rejoicing that these two enemies of mankind, in one timeline at least, were knocking lumps out of each other in the here and now. But what mattered, above all, for him and his crew, was that wormhole interface, the tetrahedral pyramid that still, he saw with mixed relief and anxiety, stood apparently intact on top of the life dome. "If you're out there, Michael," he muttered, "now would be a great time to show up, relativistic dilation or not." "Jophiel!" Harris Kemp came running up. He'd always been clumsy in the heavy gravity. Running, in fact, was unofficially forbidden on safety grounds. "Harris, how long?" "The ghosts told us you were coming back 15 minutes ago. That message delivered by hyperdrive hop. We've got them together, the crew, ours and the Gord. Some are here, some are down in the valleys, ready to move as best we can, waiting on your orders." And here was a ghost appearing out of nowhere.
"Ambassador? You may assume so."
"The Chak's invasion. This world is surely in peril."
"Indeed. We are holding the line for now, but the spline fleet must break through. And when the planetary assault comes, they will surely target our facilities."
"We need to evacuate this station, and our crew down in the valleys. Can you get us out of here? Hyperdrive would be fastest."
"We avoid the use of hyperdrive, as you call it, this deep in the gravity well of a planet."
"Except when you don't." Jophiel caught Harris's eye. Harris looked as sceptical as Jophiel himself felt. He doubted very much that the ghosts would choose to display the full capabilities of their technology to a species it so obviously saw at least as a potential threat.
"Ambassador, you must protect yourselves to the best of your ability."
And with that, it vanished. Harris was furious. He ran at the space the ghost had occupied, waving a fist.
"You Leith-spawned bastards! You're abandoning us!"
Jophiel had never seen Harris so angry, but he had a point.
"So, we help ourselves,"
Nicola Emery said, striding towards them. "Before the ghosts lose their battle in the sky."
"Nicola, how in Leith did you get here so fast?"
Then Jophiel swept a hand towards her. He touched the flesh of her arm, flesh that felt, under his own virtual hands, like smooth, warm aluminium foil.
"You got it," she said. "I'm not real. I got myself copied for once, like you do all the time."
She looked down at her own hands.
"This me is a mayfly. I hate this. How do you live with it? Well, whatever. I'm hoping my original will be evacuated with Asher when the ghosts use their FTL to escape. Just before, probably. Before what, Nicola? Why are you here? Why the urgency? I mean, why the extra urgency? What happened since I left the station? I needed to make sure the news got through.
What news?
That we're running out of time faster than you might think. The ghosts' artificial Nova event in Gooba's star?
What about it?
I think they moved it forward.
What?
Asher spotted it just after you left, Jophiel. And it's imminent. Minutes away.
Jophiel felt his unreal stomach knot up with a very real tension. A Nova on top of an alien invasion. All those lives in sudden peril. And it was his responsibility that they were here, his mission, his decisions. But, as had been Michael Poole's lifelong discipline, he tried to calm himself, to get control, to think it through.
Okay. Why would the ghosts do that now, the Nova?
I guess because they fear that if they don't do it now, they might lose the chance of doing it at all. And also the Chaks.
Nicola nodded. That's my thinking. It's a fair bet that however powerful they are, the Chaks will be disrupted by a Nova event in the middle of their invasion plan. Either way, it's worth a gamble for the ghosts.
But we won't be spared the effect of a Nova event. Even on a planet as big as Gooba C, even down here on the planet's surface, under that thick air with a magnetosphere-like armor plate.
She grinned. That's my other bit of news. You know, you always underestimated me, Poole.
I never...
Don't deny it. I'm used to it. And now the ghosts are underestimating me, too. I'm finding I have capabilities the ghosts don't seem to recognize or to have anticipated. Not surprising, really. They never tried to integrate a human sensorium into a ghost shell before.
And?
I see things they don't know I see. Know things they don't want us to know.
Such as?
Such as an energy flux out of that.
She glanced up at the dome apex, the powder blue tetrahedron patiently sitting there.
He grinned fiercely.
Something coming through.
You, probably, Poole. But your timing might be off as ever.
Be fair. The time dilation is ferocious. Since my first request for help when we were captured, it's been only a few hours. For them, on the couchy. I will be coming through as fast as he can.
He stared at her, feeling oddly awkward.
What about you? I mean, this virtual. Will you upload back to your original?
She shook her head.
Not this time. I figure somebody should stay here under that wormhole mouth until... Well, until whatever is coming through comes through. They'll need a fast briefing. Harris, get ready to evacuate the life dome. Jophiel, you should flash down to the valleys to warn the crew there.
He said bluntly, Nicola, when the Nova light hits, you'll die. This copy, everything that you are.
She shrugged. We're caught in the middle of an alien war, Poole. There will be casualties.
She glared at him. Don't dare try to hug me.
The valleys. Go, go!
He forced a grin. Then he threw himself down into the Chile valleys.
Chapter 24. Where a storm was raging. Jophiel couldn't feel the wind directly, but the consistency protocols made him stagger. The thick air of Gooba Sea, like a shallow ocean, was sluggish and heavy and took a lot of stirring up. But when it did move, it was an angry sea, a sea with a deep background roar. Presumably this was caused by the precursor events, the stars flaring. When the true Nova light hit, this would feel like a summer breeze. Now, hunched over,
He ducked his head and pushed through that sea of air, one dogged footstep at a time. He could see he was close to a cluster of blocky buildings. This was the outskirts of one of the Chile settlements, a fringe of this particular hull plate forest, where relatively large buildings grew relatively sparsely, cuboid shadows against the gloom. The light was dim, sombre, with barely a glimmer at the dawn horizon. The deep surface of Guba Sea was always gloomy anyhow, even at noon. The banks of clouds, the sheer density of the oceanic air saw to that. But now there was a different light in the sky, he realized. He peered upwards. It was like a flapping flag, huge, stained purple, yellow, green behind the clouds. Aurora light, another precursor of the rage of the star, the product of a wave of high-energy particles already slamming into the upper air. Before that light, the Chile buildings were eerie silhouettes. Nova weather, he thought desperately. Or a premonition. It was starting.
Jovial!
Ben Guba stumbled towards him, skin suit closed up, arms wrapped around his body, leaning into the wind.
I saw you out here. The ghosts just took off in their tangle ships.
Plans have changed. The ghosts won't help us. The crazy bastards are going to do it. Blow up the sun. Nicola was right. Where is everybody?
This way.
Guba began to push back towards the buildings.
As soon as the storm started up, the Gord crew ran straight for the nearest big building. We didn't try to stop them. In fact, we let them take the lead. We figured, even if they haven't been through a day quite as bad as this before, they've been here 1,000 years. You pick up instincts. And the buildings are made of indestructible Chile hull plate. There are worse places to shelter.
A fresh gust buffeted them both. Guba staggered.
Get going.
They neared the building. There was a sheet of some kind of cloth held over the door, a neat flaw in the side of the building. When Guba called out, the cloth was pulled back, and Guba lurched inside. Jofiel followed. He saw that the cloth, a ragged blanket, was being held in place by three of the Gord crew, one at each side, one at the base. Once Guba and Jofiel were inside, they resumed their positions, pressing the blanket against the breach in the building's hull. They looked tireless, practiced at the job. It was a huge relief just to be out of the wind. He was met by drawn faces behind oxygen masks. A couple of compact lamps sat on a heap of backpacks at the centre of the room. Somewhere in that pile of stuff, Jofiel supposed, was the processor that was now sustaining his own virtual presence. And the people sat on the floor, the two crews mixed up, crowding around the light. Susan Chen was here, with her arms around a couple of the Gord folk. They all wore sealed-up skin suits. That blanket was no airlock. One of the island's crew's new mothers was here, sitting in an odd, bulky skin suit with the sleeves tied up, adapted so she could hold her infant, only a few months old, inside the suit with her. Guba stood by Jofiel and murmured,
"We had to split up. We're spread across a few of the buildings. I went round and counted heads, all accounted for."
"Good work." Feeling oddly unsteady, Jofiel went to sit at the fringe of the group, avoiding any contact, any irritating consistency violations. Susan turned to him.
"Maybe we should have some food or drink while we have the chance."
At those words, a couple of the Gord crew began to rummage through the packs on the ground. Susan said,
"You can see that we've been through this kind of thing before. Storms are rare here, but they do happen. Stellar flares, too. And we learned long ago the buildings themselves are the best refuge. Strange, isn't it? That we should be sheltered by the technology of the very species that seems to have declared itself our deadliest foe.
Susan, everything about this situation is strange. A flare of light shone around the edge of the blanket, a brilliant pink violet.